Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart and home of the in-depth interview with entrepreneurs who talk about how they built their businesses and all the steps along the way that only real entrepreneurs care about and the rest of the world would probably be bored by. But for us, it's vital. Now, 3 years ago, I invited the co-founder of Trello to talk about how he launched his startup. Well, today I've got Trello's other co-founder on to talk about how the company grew to 6 million users. My goal for this interview is to understand how the way a product is built can help you acquire more users. Michael Pryor is my guest. He is the CEO of Trello, the free, flexible, and visual way to organize anything with anyone. When I organize just even events over at my house, Sunday brunch, I use Trello to make sure that I keep track of everything. And you'll find out more about the tool in a moment. But first, I should say this interview is sponsored by leadpages.net. If you're like me, you need a way to get people who are just hitting your website to convert into users. And one good way to do that is to create a great landing page that explains what your product does and explains to people why they should give you their email address and start a relationship with you. Well, I'm not great at designing those pages, so I go to a company that is great at it. They're called LeadPages, leadpages.net. Go check them out by going to, frankly, either leadpages.net or if you go to mixergy.com/leadpages, I'll take you to a bunch of their best designs so that you can see why I'm so excited about using them. Michael, welcome.
Hi, Andrew.
Hey. You know, Joel was on here. I'm so surprised that you are on here because when I Google Trello, when I Google other businesses that Joel's involved with, his name is so attached and I keep wondering, do you ever feel overshadowed by him?
Well, I'll tell you something. This is my first live video interview with anyone ever. So,
you know what? Thank you so much for doing it.
I imagine as CEO of Trello, I'll probably be having to do a lot more of them. But, you know, Joel has spent the last 15 years building up his own brand. And, you know, his blog is read by millions and millions of people. And parlayed that into successful software company, Stack Exchange. All the people that initially started using Stack Overflow were from Joel's blog, from reading Joel's blog, and also Jeff Atwood's blog. We both have different strengths, and I remember the first time I ever went to see Joel speak. Probably it was probably about 15 years ago, and it was a room of like 20 people, and the difference between that time that he spoke and, you know, when he goes in front of thousands of people now and does a keynote, it's a big difference. So it's something you just got to learn. And I'm taking a bigger role at Trello now while Joel focuses at Stack Exchange. And so it's something I just have to learn to do.
You guys met up when you were working at Juno, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's the company that was going to focus on email and give you free email that you needed a whole other piece of software to connect to, right?
That's right. It's back in the day when everyone was dialing up on AOL and you had to pay a monthly fee. And their idea was we're gonna do the dial up part for free and it'll be advertising sponsored. And then first it was just email, and then they added in internet access to compete with AOL and kind of merged with NetZero was the other company that was doing that at the time.
I read in the book Founders at Work that Joel said that you and he worked together. You had no idea what business you wanted to start, but you just thought, you know what? We can build a business where developers are treated well and the idea for what those developers build can come later. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, if you look back at the history of Fog Creek, there's probably about 13 different projects that we did. And a lot of them were failures. Like, you know, Stack Overflow Careers, which is the way that Stack Exchange makes money, was born out of Joel's job listing board that he had attached to his website. And one day we had the idea to make an Indian job board for Indian programmers to find jobs. And I think we made 24 rupees on the whole thing. But it was a huge failure. We made a content management system that was a desktop application that you ran on your computer and it uploaded all the files to the server. Because back in the day, in order to have a CMS, you had to have shell access to the web server so you could install these Perl scripts. And people didn't have that at the time. Like, if you wanted to run Typepad, you had to install all these Perl scripts, and the web hosts at the time didn't allow you to get shell access. So we thought, oh, we'll build a desktop app that you run on your computer and upload it. At the same time, Typepad was seeing the same problem, was like, okay, we'll just host it ourselves. And now, you know, that model won, and basically everyone's got, if you want a CMS, you basically just sign up and create an account immediately, and you don't have to install any scripts. But so we had a lot of different things that we tried over the years, and some of them were failures, and some of them were successes. You know, Stack Overflow turned into a huge success. Fogbugs and Kiln, our developer tools business that's, you know, the biggest part of Fog Creek right now, is a huge success. We made a screen sharing app called Copilot before LogMeIn existed. So we kind of, you know, it was a very small success for us, but that idea could have been turned into a giant business. And then Trello, huge success. But we still have a huge, there's a lot more work that we have to do with Trello, but.
But Fog Creek Software is the main business that you guys started together. And from there, all the other ideas sprang out. Some of them failures, some of them successes. And when I look at where Trello, the business that we're here to talk about, came up, I found this this quote from Joel where he said, "Bing, a light went off in my head. The great horizontal killer applications are actually just fancy data structures." Is that really how the idea that now has 6 million registered users came about?
Yeah, I mean, think about, you know, a Word doc. It's just text on a page, you know. And a PowerPoint presentation or slides are just those pages presented in a visual format on a screen. And a spreadsheet is like a table of numbers. You know, like at its core, those things, the idea of that didn't exist 40 years ago. You know, somebody had to create a spreadsheet and sort of tell people why it was useful and what it was good for. And now it's, you know, people, or even a database, people just assume those things existed. And I think, you know, what we're trying to do with Trello is create another horizontal document type to give people structure to parts of their life and their work that they didn't have before. And so that's kind of a tall order, and it's a challenge because that the word for that doesn't really exist. You know, some people call Trello a project management app. I think those are people that are using it at work for a software project. Some people call Trello a to-do list. People that are using it themselves to keep order in their own life. But really, it you know, people use it in so many different ways, and it's so lightweight that we're trying to get people to use it to just give structure to their life, where there a tool like that doesn't exist. You know, currently there's no word for it, so people aren't going to search for it. Like, if you want to plan your Thanksgiving dinner or figure out what gifts, you know, the extended family is going to buy for the kids this Christmas, and you want to collaborate on that, there isn't a thing that you search for in Google, and like it just pops up. And so I think that's a huge challenge for us, to sort of get people to understand that Trello actually fits all those use cases.
I get that. I mean, frankly, even for myself, I had Joel on here to talk about Trello. I signed up for an account, and I used it, but I wasn't fully sure what to use it for, how it would fit in my life. It would just be another place to store some ideas. And then I had a guy come into my office, and he said, "Look, here's how I work with my virtual assistant. She has this board where she and I collaborate, and I put my to-do lists on this list. When she's done with them and she's ready for me to see them, it goes on to another column." And then he worked how he did it, and I said, "Oh yeah, I can use that." And yeah, Now I use it for both in collaboration with coworkers, but also I create these Trello templates that I hand out to anyone who wants to do an interview and wants to keep the interview booking process organized. I say, look, you have a column for suggested interviewees, then you have a column for finding their email addresses, and a column for inviting them, and another column, and so on. And each guest that you potentially will invite gets a card on the first column, and then you keep moving them over column by column until you've done an interview. I get it. I feel like it is a tough thing to explain and to understand. So I want to understand how you guys communicated it to people, but let's first go back and see where the origin started.
Okay.
You didn't set out to create a project management tool or a horizontal structure for organizing data. You guys said, you know what, we want to go after civilians, is what I read Joel Spolsky say. Why civilians as opposed to developers?
Well, I mean, there were a bunch of you know, ideas that went into Trello. And one of them was that we didn't want to build an app that was just for developers. We had built Fabulous Kiln, we had built Stack Overflow. And, you know, a huge success from Stack Overflow was actually getting it broader and going out to Stack Exchange, even though Stack Overflow by itself is a huge success. But we wanted to do something where we create a mass market product, that there is just, you know, a huge demand for it and tons of people got value out of it. That's also why it had to be free, because we didn't want there to be any friction to it spreading. And we knew that we could find the people that were getting a lot of value out of the product and get them to pay a small amount. I know it's just one of the things that, you know, a challenge or something. We saw a lot of different pieces coming together. Like you would go into, at the time, you would go any software company and you would look where their developers were, and they would all have a whiteboard. And it would have post-it notes on it, and they would be in columns, and they would manage their software development process by moving those post-it notes across the board. And it's the style of a working called Kanban, which is very familiar to developers, but not really known outside of that. And that was going on. We were seeing that happening everywhere. That was really useful for these agile teams that were moving really fast and, you know, switching away from the old way of tracking things, like where you basically had this huge database of items that you had to do and you were just adding more tasks and more tasks in the old style project management app, where you would ask it for all the, you'd be like, what things do we have to do for this milestone? And it would give you a list of 100 cases. You know, that worked well. I think the way that companies used to work, where you would ship software on a fixed schedule, you would put a bunch of features into a release and then you would ship that release on a certain date.
Yep.
And now you have more web apps where it's like, I'm going to make a feature and ship it next week, and then I'm going on to the next thing. And it doesn't make sense for me to think about things that might happen in 3 or 6 months, because the app could be totally different at that point in time. And so we sort of felt the need for that ourselves. We also felt the need for collaborating with our company and sort of figuring out what was actually going on, to sort of get a higher level view of what people were working on. We,
you mean you internally needed this tool too?
Yeah.
You wanted to make sure that you were, okay, so let me see.
Like,
if
you'd be at work and you'd be like, I don't know what everyone's doing.
I get
not
that feeling.
On the specific, like, micromanaging, but just, is the company moving towards its goals? Like, is the company getting closer to shipping?
Okay, so FogBugs is bug tracking software built for developers. Stack Exchange, question and answer site that you guys built, starting with developers and then moving on to the rest of the world, including cooks and people who are into grammar and math, etc.
Yeah.
Now you said, we're going to start with a mass market product. We can reach a big audience. Joel at the time told me he wanted to reach 100 million people. You told me when I started this conversation with you, before I even hit record, yes, we're up to 6 million. Our goal is 100 million, so we're only 6% of the way there. I see how you wanted to think bigger. I'm also getting a sense of where the idea for the structure of the software came from, those post-it notes that people used to keep on whiteboards, etc. The first, before you built the first version, did you interview people internally at the company and say, look, we're thinking of building this, how would it fit your needs and solve a problem that you have?
So the genesis of the idea was that at FogCreek, we have a culture of innovation. We try lots of different things. I talked about that before. One, at this moment in time, you know, what it was in 4 years ago when we started, when Trello first launched, you know, before that, when we were first building it, we had a couple ideas and we took a few developers and worked on those different ideas. And one of the ideas was, Joel had this idea for a to-do list that you could only put 5 things in. It was called 5 things. And there were 2 things that you're working on now, 2 things, and you could switch between them. You know, if you're compiling on waiting for this code to compile, you can work on the other thing. 2 things that you're going to work on next, up to bat, and then 1 thing you were just not going to work on at all. And that's it. Those are the only things you can put on the list. If you want to put something else on the list, you have to take something off. And that was just sort of like this idea that was, you know, trying to get at, I think, you know, the feeling of, you look at the way people use email, and they just, their inbox grows and grows and grows because they put too much stuff in it, and then they get frustrated. Because we have a hard time as humans, I think, letting go of things that we might want to do in the future. And this was like forcing you to do that. It was like, you're never going to get to those things. So if you keep them around, it's just making you feel worse because you have this backlog of stuff and okay. you just sort of slowed down by it. So this idea of five things was just to free you from that and just accept the fact that you can only really concentrate on a couple things at once. And that worked together with the whiteboards that we saw and the post-it notes, and we sort of, you know, used some of those ideas, and Trello grew into what it is today. And essentially we started using it internally. We saw the devs were actually using it after, I don't know, a couple hundred lines of code, like 900 lines of code were written. They started using it to help them build Trello.
How many developers did you have at the time?
Oh, like three.
Three or four developers then were using this as a way of keeping up with what they were all working on together.
Right.
Okay.
Then Joel was mentoring a Techstars company, which is a couple of people, and we had them start using it. And we basically took people that we knew and showed it to them and asked them if they would use something like that and just kept iterating on that.
Do you remember one of the pieces of feedback from your users that helped shape the product? The early users.
Well, one thing, I know the reverse of that, which is that we would, because of the people that we were using it or that were using it initially, a lot of the feedback that we got was from developers trying to turn it into a developer tool. And if you look out there and you look for Kanban or agile management tool, or there's like a million, you know, and they're very structured about the workflow that you have, the terminology that it uses. They're tools for developers. Like the websites are trying to attract developers to use it. The marketing material is for developers. The features are for developers. And when we started Trello, we knew that that was something we weren't going to do. So it was, when people would give us that kind of feedback, it was nice to be able to understand that this was something that we weren't ever going to add. Adding priorities or swim lanes, you know, having the cards be in a certain row and things like that.
I see. Because you said we are going to go for a mass audience, even though you had user demand that told you that they really needed this extra feature, you said no.
Right.
I see.
One thing we realized later was that we had lulled ourselves into thinking that all of the initial users were more technical. And so it meant when we would launch a new feature and get feedback that sometimes we were able to sort of discard what they were saying because we were thinking, oh, they're kind of jaded because they're developers, which meant that it was much harder for us to figure out whether the feature was actually good or not. I'll give a more specific example.
Yeah, please.
We added stickers that you could put on the front of Trello cards. So there'd be like a sticker pack and there was no semantic meaning for that. Like it was just a sticker. It was just visual. And we thought that developers would hate that. We didn't do it because we thought developers would hate it, but we thought that the feedback from developers was they wouldn't like it because it was just adding cruft. You know, it wasn't, there's no way to search for the types of stickers. They would want, you know, labels and tags and things like that. And this was just more of a fun thing to make Trello more fun because that was one of the tenets that we wanted was we wanted the product to be fun. So when we first started getting the feedback from the beta testers, we initially thought, oh, well, all the people that have signed up for the beta were sort of self-selecting. They were people that really were into what we were doing. They followed us. We sent out an email. You know, they replied. And so those people are generally more technical in nature. And so their feedback, we can kind of, well, they're not, you know, their feedback isn't going to be legitimate for the consumer that market that we're really going after. Okay. And that may or may not be true or have been true, but what I realized at that point in time was that the way that we select people to give us feedback has to be completely random. Like it has to have a mix of all kinds of people, not people that self-select to be beta testers. Because if you just go out and ask for beta testers on Twitter, you're going to get a certain type of people. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, you're number one, a user who's a Twitter follower, right, or Twitter user back, right, then, and number two, someone who's following you is probably more into development and startup, right, environment. So then what did you do to broaden the pool of beta testers beyond the tech community that you guys had close relationships with?
Well, the one of the things that we saw happening, and you know, we were focused on just building a really good horizontal product and then letting people talk about it and spread it through word of mouth. And we had hoped that would happen, you know, organically, because we were just a small company. We didn't really, we couldn't spend a lot of money on marketing. And in fact, we just hired a marketing person this summer and have, you know, just started doing those sorts of activities. But
this is Stella.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what we saw was a bunch of people started writing blog posts about how they were using Trello for this or for that. And, you know, like User Voice wrote a blog post, Ryan Carson Treehouse wrote a blog post. There was a guy from PayPal that wrote a blog post about how he uses it for recruiting. Heroku was using it for onboarding. Like, they would create a board with all the things that a new employee had to do or learn about. And then every time a new employee would start, they would clone the board and, you know, put the person on that new board. And then if the process changed at all, well, they would just, you know, modify that original onboarding template. It was really
Forgive me, but all of those people who you mentioned are very technical, very startup-oriented yes. people. So you're, by even
having... But they were using it in ways that weren't software development ways.
I see. Right? So even though they were using it to onboard new employees, it's not a technical use. It's right. more of a business-oriented use, and that's what broadened, I see.
So then you would see if it got into a company and it went in through the tech team, it would jump over to sales and marketing, or it would jump over to HR. We are seeing that by the blog post that people were writing. We knew that that was happening. Now, to what extent that was happening, it wasn't really clear, and we're not going to look at people's data. So, and we don't ask people what department they're in.
What about this? What did you build into the product that allowed it to jump? Because it wasn't just happenstance.
I mean, that's like asking me, like, how do you make a great product? You know, there's so many things that go into it.
Give me some of it. What's one big important
thing?
Well,
it had to be fun. It had to be free. Those were sort of, you know, if it wasn't fun, people that wouldn't use it outside of work. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't free, there's a lot of friction. And you'd also have a lot of competition. It's collaborative by nature, so Trello is much more useful when you're working with other people. You can certainly use it for yourself as a to-do list, but it was designed to be used by a whole bunch of people. I think, you know, it's so lightweight and horizontal that if you saw somebody else using it at your company, you're in sales and a developer and you're trying to manage some custom work for this one product and you see them using it, that you can immediately understand that metaphor because it's so visual. You know, and it already exists in the real world. Like, people do this. They put Post-it notes up on their monitor. And it works with that, the way people think spatially. You know, like, you put things on your desk in certain places and they mean certain things, or even on your desktop. And so it just took advantage of a lot of those different things and just all came together to be a great product. And then people just, you sort of cross your fingers and hope that they're going to recommend it and other people are going to use it. And then they did.
I see. So if I, as a business owner, used it internally but wanted to recommend it to a friend or have someone else in the company use it, and before they got to use it, I'd have to buy a seat for them or another license, that would be too much friction and I wouldn't pass it on. That's why you decided that you would make it free. And so free allowed it to grow.
Right. Because we felt that the business that we wanted to build was a huge audience of people, like Evernote, for example, right? It's the mm-hmm. same model, or Dropbox, where you have, you're giving a lot of value to people, but the people that get a ton of value, those people are paying you.
You know what, though? Evernote didn't realize the collaborative part of their product until later on in their evolution. You guys realized
very
early.
Yeah, I mean, I think Evernote's more of a personal product, and they're struggling now. Well, not struggling, I shouldn't say that, but they're trying to figure out now, like, how do we push the business aspect? Like, how do we get people to put their business stuff in here? Because that's, you know, a lot of them, it's much easier to make money from businesses than it is for consumers.
Right.
And so they started from, you know, consumer, work by yourself, put all your notes in there, not data that you would want other people to see. And now they have to convince people to use it collaboratively. Whereas Trello started collaboratively and lots of people use it by themselves because it's already on their phone. Or, you know, you use it at work and then you you invite your husband or your wife to use it at home because you want to get more structure to like all the projects that you have to do around your house. Or you're doing a kitchen renovation and you invite your contractor on board because you really want to know whether that renovation is moving forward or not. You just want to give yourself more clarity into that project.
Well, Michael, it's more than just the inherent, as far as I can tell, and I'm an outsider, and that's why I have you on so that you can give me a check on this. I feel like it's more than just the inherent nature of this kind of product that allowed it to spread. I'm looking here at one of my Trello boards, the one that I use with our developers, and on the right side, I see an activity list, so I can see what he and other people on the team have worked on. But at the very top, even as I scroll, I always see it, a button that says add members, right? By making it so prominent, by making it so easy to add new people, you encourage me to bring more people in this conversation and allow the software to be more viral.
And you know, we've done a lot of different things related to that. We have a consumer product called Trello Gold where you get custom board backgrounds and more stickers and just fun stuff. Like, not things that you would need to get a lot of value out of Trello. But if you're a super fan and you want to, you know, give us some money, there are people out there that were like, when we first launched and it was free, there were people that were like, I'm not going to use it because I don't trust that it'll be around if I can't pay for it. So we kind of launched Trello Gold as a way for people to give us money and get some fun features. But we also give it away for free if you invite more people to Trello. So if you get a user to use Trello, then you'll get a free month of Trello Gold.
There. So that's another reason why the product spreads.
I'm not trying to build a whole business on top of the revenue from Trello Gold. But it's definitely useful to help encourage and give thanks to people that spread Trello and get other people to use it.
How much revenue comes in from Trello Gold?
It's negligible. It's not a lot of money.
I see. So the only reason you put a price on it is so that when I get it for free, I feel like, oh, I'm not just getting these cool features. You're nodding. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it has a value, and there are people that, you know, pay for it. And it's certainly the case that, you know, we're asking you to do something for us and then giving you something in return. But the real revenue generation from Trello will come from businesses who are getting a ton of value out of it and are happy to pay for it. We just hired a salesperson, actually, 2 months ago. And going back to what I was telling you before about how a bunch of teams, you know, like one team will use it here and then it'll jump to another team will use it here. We found that there were a lot of really big companies where they had hundreds of people using Trello, but they were all spread out throughout the organization. You know, it might be a team of 10 here and a team of 20 here, and they weren't connected in any way. But the organization has, the bigger the company is, the more like rules they have about purchasing. They'd rather just pay once, you know, for everyone. And, you know, using the invoice and a PO system, they have a 30-page contract that they want you to sign. You know, so there's like a high barrier to entry, and we just started helping companies, you know, be legitimate, because I think a lot of teams within these companies would just use it and not worry about that stuff. But once you've signed the contract, then you're like, your foot's in the door, and it makes it a lot easier for a big company, for people at a big company to use it.
This is a Trello Business Class that you guys have added.
Yeah, that product that I was discussing was Trello Enterprise, which is just sort of a layer on top of Trello Business Class. But Business Class is a bunch of features around an organization that's using Trello. So things like member management, you know, somebody leaves the company and you want to reclaim the boards that they own, exporting your data because you're worried that, you know, Trello might disappear or something like that. Things that are of a concern to a company that is running their business off of Trello.
Who can make a board visible or non-visible.
So yeah, no, it's permissioning, things like that. But nothing that's going to prevent a team, for example, at a company from using Trello and getting a lot of value out of it. So you're at a big co, but you don't have any budget. You can use Trello because it's free and you don't need business class. You can just start using it. And then later, once the business is making a lot of, or getting a lot of value out of Trello, we can add on a couple features and services on the back, and the business is happy to pay for it.
How did you know what features to add into that?
It's not done. you know, there's probably a lot more stuff that we need to add.
But did you have conversations with your customers? You did.
Yes.
What's your process for talking to customers and learning what they need?
We did a ton of just interviews like this. We do video interviews and record them and transcribe some of the important details. And now the salesperson that we hired is, you know, calling all these people and talking to them and getting data from them. We have one of the designers working with a lot of new users to Trello and sort of looking at the new user experience and how you get into Trello and, you know, what makes, is there anything we can do when people first sign up to get them much more engaged later on and not like lose them immediately? But it's just people calling people, asking them if they want to talk.
What's the process? So you call some, you see, do you want to have a conversation? A customer says yes. You do video like this. If you're trying to figure out what the onboarding is like, I'm guessing you want someone who's never been on the site before, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you get them on.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different ways to do that. It's like at Fog Creek, sometimes we've actually paid people to come in, like using Craigslist or something. The problem with that is you get, actually, it would be good for Trello, but in the past, we were using it for products that were more geared toward technical people, and you'd get like a very wide range of people if you just use Craigslist. But if we contacted a company that was using Trello and had just started using Trello, it's very easy for us to find people at the organization that haven't had experience with it yet and talk to the person who does have experience in sort of introducing it to the organization and talk to them about how they're inviting people to the boards and then later interview the people that got on the boards and see what was confusing about when they signed up and things like that.
I see. Now, I'm acting like you've been on board from the beginning, which you were, and you've been in there every single day, but you took some time away to work at Stack Exchange as a CFO, right?
That wasn't my only job. I was sort of doing a lot of different things, and part of my role was doing the financial side of Stack Exchange. But my background is a developer. Like, I have a computer science degree, so that only got us so far. And thankfully, I hired a real finance person recently.
How'd you end up being the finance guy for a venture-funded, well-funded company?
When we first started Fog Creek, I think the first 5 years of Fog Creek, Joel did all the operational stuff. So like the payroll and the QuickBooks and all of those things. And then we switched. We traded off. And I kind of got stuck with it a lot longer. And then when we started Stack Exchange, there was no one else to do it. So I just took it on. And, you know, when there were like 8 people, it wasn't that much work. And just gradually over time, as we got more and more people, it became more and more. And then eventually we got to the point where like, hey, we need to hire a person with a real finance background. And it just happened to coincide with a point in time where we were like, okay, and also that'll open up, that'll free me to spend more time focusing on Trello.
I think it was you and AliWatch.com who said raising money was easy, relatively speaking, even though you guys at the time had raised $10.3 million. But separating Trello from its parent company was the tough part.
Oh, yeah.
What was the challenge there?
It's a people issue. The culture, and we had been through this before with Stack Exchange, so we were kind of... you know, we knew what we were getting into. And I think that's partially why it took us, we bootstrapped Trello for 3 years before we took VC. And the VC people that we had experience with at Stack Exchange, we knew people, they wanted to invest years before we actually decided to take money. But it's hard to sort of separate a business and people's identity with their company and, you know, I wanted to work for that company. Now I'm working for this company. Those were my coworkers. Now I have different coworkers. Where's our office going to be? It's a difficult process.
Did it feel a little bit like playing dodgeball in school where you separate into two teams and someone says, why didn't I get picked on your team? And someone else says, why did I get picked on that team?
Yeah. I mean, it was a little bit easier because at Trello, you know, we kind of saw this coming. And so we were running the business where people were either on the developer tools business or they were on the Trello business, except for a few operational people like finance and recruiting. So there wasn't a lot of overlap in the group. So people knew that they were at Trello or Fuckwick. But, you know, we were happy to talk to anyone that didn't, that wanted to be on one side or the other and figure out if what was the right spot for them. And it was actually, I think compared to Stack Exchange, the way that that went, it was much easier, much better process.
So what's the challenge? So far, it seems like everything is fairly easy. Bing, an idea goes off. Boom, you end up sending an email to a few of your users and they come in. You get some feedback and the product evolves. Has there been any challenge or is it all just smooth sailing here?
Well, I think, you know, when we decided to take VC, we signed on to a whole new challenge because they were, you know, if we just grow the way that we've been growing, that's not succeeding at the challenge that we signed up for. We raised money so we could accelerate the growth and really ramp it up. And if, you know, sitting back and saying, oh, we're getting more members every week, you know, and that's not going to cut it for getting to 100 million. I look at, actually I found a chart where Evernote published their user signup numbers and put Trello's signup numbers on top of that to see if we were performing, because they recently passed 100 million signups sometime this year. And, you know, the far right side of that hockey stick gets really steep. And it's a big challenge to grow. I mean, one of our top focus right now is internationalization. Just getting into a lot of different markets because we know those people are already using Trello. But we can just open up a great product to a whole bunch of people that don't speak English. So, and that's a huge challenge for the company, not just from a technical nature, but it adds all these things on top of your process now. You know, like you have to do it in a way that doesn't slow your organization down because, we need to translate that to Portuguese, or now we need more marketing materials for all these different languages. We need more support people to handle all the incoming queries. And it definitely gets more and more complicated as you get bigger and bigger and sort of go after that consumer market.
You know what? I don't see the chart that you mentioned, but I do see one in Business Insider about Evernote's growth to 5 million users. It looks like they hit 5 million users in 83 days. Is that right? No, that can't be.
No,
I see. I don't know. Oh, 83 days to go from 4 million to 5 million. That's the difference. Yeah. Okay.
Right. And then that starts to get much smaller every, you know, the time to add another million gets smaller and smaller. We just, you know, I think it was two months ago, we're at 5 million or something like that. Mm. We did a big hoopla, a big marketing campaign. And
I saw that.
Yeah. So that was 5, and, you know, now we're at 6.5. And so it's definitely growing faster, but it just gets faster. You have to grow faster and faster and faster.
There's another article that just happened to come up as I was searching for Evernote's data that you mentioned earlier.
Okay.
It's called 5 Moves That Fueled Evernote's Impressive Growth, and it's by Mashable. If we had to say the same thing for Trello, what are 5 moves that allowed you guys to grow to 6 million people so fast within 3 years?
Well, I mean, the most obvious one, which is not something you can just set out to do, is to build a product that people love. You know, the thing about Trello was different than all the other things that we built, because we were building an app for everyone instead of just a particular audience, was when we would see the tweets that people would say about how much they love Trello, it was just totally different than anything we had ever built before. And we knew that we were doing something right. Now,
what
I don't
was
know,
that thing that you did right? Because
if I knew, I'd make that a product. It's just a combination of so many different things. You know, it's people would write tweets where they were like, I wish I could marry Trello, you know? And it's like, I don't know, they're being goofy, but what makes people feel that kind of connection with a software product?
Here's what I'm getting. I mean, I'm oversimplifying it, but part of my job here is, and part of our job together, is to simplify the complicated for the audience and give them something meaningful that they can use. And so what I'm getting is conversations with the real users, including watching them use the product in person, a vision for what the product is that's based in reality of seeing how people are using offline tools in the real world. Dog fooding, right? You guys have used your product from the beginning. So I don't
and
think...
And I think also a big one is design.
Okay.
Like, if you look at, like, why is Medium so... Like, why does Medium feel so much better as a content platform than, like, writing a type blog or a blogger blog? I don't know. Mm-hmm. For me, it's, you know, the hero bar, the big picture at the top. I just see that, and I'm like, I feel good about reading that. Oh, the typeface just looks nice. The white space on the side. You know, it's not that different than other blogging platforms, you know? Like, there are definitely different features and those sorts of things, but, like, what makes it so different and there's these little touches, you know? So we have little touches all over the app. Like, we have a little spokes husky, little dog taco that it pops up every once in a while, just rarely, to tell you about new things that are in Trello. And just the way, the tactile nature of dragging the cards around, the fact that, you know, that is it feels just like, you know, on an iPad. Actually, it's a great experience. Just small little things like that. Like the color of Trello probably has a lot to do with it, although we didn't necessarily set out to scientifically determine what the best.
I do see a big difference here. My researcher put up the first HTML mockup of what was called Trellis before it became Trello, yeah. Right?
So it's that gray and white. Trellis was, the idea was that this software gives structure to what you're doing. And so that's why the code name was Trellis, but we couldn't get the domain. So.
I see. And that's why you changed it to Trello. But I do see now the difference. The color, instead of being this rich, beautiful blue, it's more gray and black and white. And so the color, you're saying, help draw people in. Okay, so it's the product, and we described a little bit about how the product helped grow your user base. What are a couple of other things that allowed the user base to grow so massively in such a short period of time?
Well, I mean, the app is collaborative by nature. Like, people are using it to solve problems when they're organizing with other people.
Okay.
So by its nature, you know, just because of the type of app it is, it helps itself spread because you invite more people to use it. That's what it's designed for. You know, giving away Trello Gold to people that add members. And I think... here's another thing. So we, you know, one of the challenges with building a horizontal product is, what about those people that start to use it more and more, and they have a higher need for more complex features? You know, how do you do that without ruining that first user experience and making it so easy for the original people to sign up? And so we struggle with that too, which is, you know, if you don't add more detailed features, then people are going to switch to something else when they get to a certain point. And one of the ways that we solved that was with power-ups. So they're kind of hidden, but there's a way to turn on certain features on a board. You can turn on, like, a calendar view. You can turn on voting. You can turn on a card aging, and there'll be more in the future. But the idea is that to put some of that more advanced feature stuff behind, you know, a curtain, so it doesn't have to confuse people. One of the people that works for Trello, she was trying to organize holiday presents for her family, for her kids, like for her mom to buy presents for her kids and her brother to buy presents for her kids so that people didn't buy the same presents. And she set up this Trello board, and it had all these different lists. You know, the first list was gift ideas. The second list was gifts that have been bought. There was a couple different lists. And so she invited her mom to the Trello board, and who had never used Trello before. So she signs in, and she starts just, the mother just starts making cards all over the place and just, like, typing questions to Liz, the person that works for us. And Liz, she's kind of getting frustrated. She's like, she's using it completely wrong. I had this whole process. I don't know why she's putting cards there. And I said to her, yeah, but look, it works. Like, you're communicating with her. Like, you're going to tell her, you're going to answer her question and also tell her, oh, mom, put the card for the gift in this column. Like, it wasn't that she had to learn that first in order to start using the product and talk to you. It was just flexible. It didn't work the way you wanted it to, but that's because there isn't a set structure to it. And so it allows people that don't have much experience with your app to just get right in and start using it.
I see. Yeah. So even if they're not using it right, it still works.
Right. Exactly. Right. And then you get the opportunity to help them use it right. I think there's a downside to that, though, too, which is that sometimes people just get overwhelmed by that. And they're like, oh, I don't know how to use it. I don't know what the right way is. Just tell me what the right way is. And so we're working on ways to sort of give examples to people to show them ideas. Because I think, you know, when I talk about that onboarding Trello board where you have the new employee and you clone the board, like when I give that example, people are like, oh, that's a great idea. I should do that. Like, so we have to figure out ways to help people see how Trello could be used in all their different
I always thought that would be helpful, that when we start out, instead of being told we can create this generic board, it'd be nice if we can say, I need a board that allows me to collaborate with a developer, or a board that allows me to onboard people. Can you give me a template that already does that?
The template word, that word is kind of a weird word, because I shy away from that a little bit, because I think what you're trying to achieve there is just so that people can understand. Because, like, you know, in Trello world, a template, what would that be? Like some columns with, like, you know, labeled at the top? Like there's not much to it, right? The important piece is somebody seeing a use case of Trello in a certain or a certain usage of Trello and going, oh, yeah, that's how I could do it. And then specific to how they're using it, they'll be able to set the list up the way that they want, but there isn't much in the board itself that would carry over from use case to use case.
I see.
Like if mm-hmm. we had an onboarding template, what would be in it?
Just the
like
column names, but then the column names tell me so much about what to do with it.
Yeah.
But you're saying maybe what I need is use cases, not columns.
Yeah. Telling you, I've done 90% of the work by just giving you that example and telling it to you. It's like if you wanted to go make your onboarding board now, you could do it in 2 seconds. That would be relevant to Mixergy, right? Not to some other company like Heroku or something.
I don't think in the first time that I used it, there were three columns, doing, done, right?
So we were, I think it might still be an A-B test, but we are experimenting with just stop doing that, because it sort of implied that Trello was a to-do list, and it's not. I mean, that's one way that you can use it. It might have stopped the A-B test, and now it's just, you just get columns, but that we've stopped putting to-do, doing, done as the default board that you get when you create
it. I see, because then I do think of it just as a to-do list, where maybe instead my columns should be ways to improve the video interview, ways to improve the audio interview, ways to improve the transcript, and now we have three columns where we can have suggestions and vote and so on. I see.
Yeah, because the first thing that most people were doing was actually renaming those lists.
Yeah.
So.
I get that. I do that all the time, too. But, you know, this is a big challenge for software that wants to be as ubiquitous as a spreadsheet and as flexible as a basic piece of paper. I feel like it's a big challenge. I remember talking to Justin Kahn about why they felt they had to change Justin TV into Twitch TV. And he basically said that it's just too broad. We needed to narrow down to one topic. And Twitch was just video games, so people understood how to use us. And then he, of course, went on and created Exec, which was personal assistance for anything. And then I guess he narrowed it down to home cleaning because it was too broad. Mm-hmm. How do you fight that?
I think, you know, part of this is just we're figuring out as we go along. I mean, we have this goal. That's what we want to do. I think, you know, there was an article that in Fast Company recently that was sort of that question, which was Trello's trying to be everything. Can they do that? And it's not really, I don't think we're trying to be everything. I'm certainly not trying to make Trello an applicant tracking system for a recruiter, for example. People can use it that way. Is it the best applicant tracking system? No. But what it is a really lightweight tool that you can use to get clarity in your life. And, you know, I think people are using it in many different ways. So I don't see us struggling with adoption. You know, I think if we were in a different place and we were like, ah, like Trello can be used in so many different ways and people don't know it and they won't use it in these different ways, that we may, you know, pull back and say, okay, let's focus on a vertical. We'll get traction there. That way we can, our marketing message will be consistent and people can pick it up. And then we'll worry about going to the next thing and then the next thing. But we don't, we're currently not having that problem. People are understanding that they can use it for many, many different things. And so that's, you know, that's what we want.
You feel that that has helped you? The ability to use it for so many different things allows people to take it from the development side of their business to the sales side at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you people just already get it. They're using it at work. And so then it's just easy to use it in other contexts.
So what are some home uses that we should be aware of? I always like use cases.
They called it a honey-do list, like things to do around the house, like things that you're like, oh, those projects that I got to get done. And it's usually the case where one person has to do it and the other person is like nagging, you know, really wants you to do, you know, let's say a husband, a husband wants a wife to do something or a wife wants a husband to do something. And the nice thing about Trello is then when you do it, they can see that it's done, right? Like it's a way to sort of say, we're making progress. Like I didn't do that thing that you wanted because I was doing this other thing. The kitchen contractor, Joel, redid his house and redid his kitchen. And he was trying to figure out what they were doing because he was like, I don't know, the date keeps slipping. And he's like, what is going on? Working with, like, basically trying to get a picture into is this project making progress, essentially, in a loosely defined project.
You know, I here's what I use it for at home. As I said earlier, I have people come over for brunch, sometimes for dinner, sometimes for scotch night, and I have a different set of things that I like to do to prep for each of those events, and then one thing that's for all of them. Mm-hmm. Like, go check the bathroom, make sure there's nothing embarrassing, you know, that I do for brunch, dinner, scotch, whatever. So I just have a different card for each one of my events, and on it are all the little things that I like to have ready before people come over. So if it's brunch, I like to have some champagne and orange juice sitting right on the counter with some glasses. So the first thing someone sees when they come in is a glass that they can have something to drink. And I also like to have my coffee maker right there so I can offer them coffee if they prefer. And once that's done, I check that off. If it's dinner, it's wine on the counter and music also playing on the stereo. So all those little things, that's one of my best use cases for Trello. And I do that on my own. My wife does not believe we should be so anal about the way we prep for having people over.
So that, I mean, that's, you know, some people are like, oh, like, why do you do all that work? And I think it's, you know, then you don't have to. Like, if you don't get enjoyment out of like getting that structure, then you don't need something like that. But another use case where it's not necessarily a workflow or a checklist or to-do items, Joel has a board that's all the art in his house because he collects different kinds of art. And so he has cards, and in the front of the card is a picture of the artwork, and on the back is all those details about it. And it's more of like, in that case, it's more of like just data. You know, there's not really, it's not anything he has to do on that board. He's not really collaborating with anyone. But Trello's already on his phone. It's on the home screen. So just click, click. He can see all his art, you know. And it's interesting when you have a flexible tool like that to see how people use it in ways that you would never have imagined.
I'm looking to see what other creative use I've had for it. You know what? There's one that I subscribe to, and you can subscribe to other people's boards with suggestions and tools. Two different ones, I guess. One is suggestions by topic. Each topic has its own column. Each suggestion has its own card, and you can vote up and down. And I think you guys have one of those for suggestions mm-hmm. for how to improve Trello. And the other is for tools. So you get tools by category. Each category has its own column, and each product within that category has its own card. You know what? Here's another thing that I like about you guys, the API. So there are some things that you don't do. Like, you can let me via email add a card to one column at a time.
Yeah.
But because you have an API, I can go to Zapier and create an email system that allows me to send email directly to the column that I want. Or yep. If I move something to a column, to send email to someone else and say, hey, Andrew just moved it to another column, get on it.
Yeah, so actually on the back end, this would be more interesting for the developers, but one of the things that we learned from just our previous experience was that we treated our web app actually is a client just like the iOS app and the Android app, and they all talk to the API. So all of our apps are actually consumers of the API as well.
I see.
So anyone can use the API, and those apps are just kind of, they're not using a secret version of the API. And the nice thing about that was that abstraction made things really easy for us to just sort of like compartmentalize things and iterate quicker because it wasn't all connected and sort of mangled together.
What do you mean? What's an example of how, because your API and the product are separated, because your product is built on the API, that you're able to evolve faster?
Well, then the teams can sort of just work on, the teams can be smaller, right? Because there can be a server team that's sort of responsible for the API. And so when we do something like localization that's going to have effects all over the place, like we start there. We can sort of say, okay, this is the common interface across all of our apps. What kind of things are we going to need to support or change in order to do that? It also means that performance is much easier to handle because everyone's using the API. So the way to make sure that your performance is up to, you know, speed is just to measure how the API is performing and make sure that it's going to, you know, if there's something, like if there's some way to optimize it, then do it. And then everyone gets the benefit of that. I think having your apps be clients of the API that you also publish for everyone else to develop on, it just gives a certain nice structure, and I think the developers really like it, and it just makes it cleaner.
So your first interview is seconds, maybe a minute or so away from being done. How's it feel?
It was easy. That was easy.
Yeah, you know what? You were an easy guest to have on.
You're an easy guy to talk to. So,
you know, I didn't ask you to do a pre-interview. Usually I would, but I peppered Stella with a lot of questions in preparation, and I tried having a researcher put information together as an experiment to see, can we get the same level of information from researching and talking to Stella as we would from a pre-interview? And it was a really interesting example for me. Really interesting experiment, I should say, for me.
What was the result? Did it work?
You know what? It worked in some levels, but it didn't in others. So I felt that we could have prepped you a little bit better about what it was about the product that allowed it to go viral, that allowed it to grow so much, so that you wouldn't be put on the spot here trying to figure out how to explain to us what years and years of product development did that we could understand and then do ourselves.
And I know that's what you're trying to do, right? To distill that down for people and to figure that out. And it's like, it's so complicated, right? There's so many different things that go into that. And it's hard for even us to be self-aware of why Trello was successful and sort of Copilot didn't turn into Log Me In. You know, like why is Fog Creek the size it is and Atlassian that makes the same products the size it is? You know, like, There's so many complicated things that go into answering that question that it's not, I don't even know if we could solve, if we could solve it now, but I hope that we got some.
I'm sure we did, because that
some wisdom out of this.
I know we did, because I'm a great interviewer and you are an incredible CEO. I know you've had the track record for years. I'm curious, do you spend time internally or maybe outside of the office with a bottle of wine saying to yourselves, why did this work? What do we need to do more of? Because that's what our strengths are.
I think we definitely ask ourselves that every day, because one of our biggest fears, and all, I mean, this is the same at Stack Overflow too, right? Like, find a developer today that hasn't heard of Stack Overflow, like, huge success. But you know, we have, the big fear is like, what if everyone starts using something else, or what, you know, like, what is, if we can't put our finger on why people love Trello exactly, we might change something that makes them not like it. Like, if it is the
right
shade of blue,
yeah,
that Trello is, and then we change the color, like, we could get people to, you know, be like, I don't know. I just don't like this app.
That is a scary thing. Yeah. I remember even Paul Graham telling me and Jessica Livingston saying that whatever it is that Paul Graham had that allowed people to develop products because they didn't know what it was, it could have just disappeared. Or at least Paul Graham did. Jessica laughed it off. But over the years, you can see that they've refined their understanding of what it is that makes the startups they work with successful and what causes them to fail. And that allows them to do more of what works. And I could see that you guys are, you guys are doing some of that.
Yeah. Yeah. We're definitely doing some of that and we're getting better at it. So,
well, if you guys ever want me to come over there, bring a bottle of wine, or actually it'll be scotch, and have a conversation like this where I drill you and pull out all this information from you, I'd be happy to come down.
I'd love that. It'd be great.
All right, cool. I've admired your work for years. I've admired Joel's, not just his articles, but frankly, here's the cool thing about Joel. Years ago, somebody wrote something nasty on my site and attached his name to it. And I emailed him over and I said, I'm sorry, what was it about what I said that made you... Anyway, he could have just totally blown that off. Yeah. He responded immediately back. He explained it. And I thought, this is such a nice touch from some guy who must be incredibly busy. Everyone in your organization has been like that.
Well, I thought, you know, one of the things you could ask me was like, how do you find a co-founder? Like,
how do you find a good co-founder?
It's like, I don't know. I got so lucky. You know, I found an amazing friend and a business partner and somebody that's very just super smart and super honest. Like, he's just basically like a lot of the culture around Fog Creek and how we have profit sharing there and the way that we treat employees and the benefits and stuff like that. It all came from, you know, Joel's just his sense of fairness, or even our compensation system and those sorts of things. And so, you know, he's been an amazing partner. I got really lucky. I just got lucky because it was just a serendipity that we were at the same company and we hit it off on a personal level. And then, you know, we just said, hey, I'm the market's kind of tanking. It was 2000 and why don't we go do our own thing? And we did. And the first 4 years, it was like us in an apartment, you know, trying to get
his grandmother's apartment.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, looking back now, it's just it's ridiculous that it turned into these companies with collectively like over 300 people working there. So, but yeah, it's been a fun ride, and I'm really excited for the future.
Well, congratulations on it, and I wouldn't I can't end this without saying thank you to Stella for introducing us. Stella Garber is amazing.
Yeah, I had my eye on her for a long time. I had worked with her, or I'd seen her and talked to her and seen what she had done at a previous company. And I knew when I started Trello, I had to get her.
For PR, you mean? You saw what she did there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I kept, you know, I remember poking at that over the years. And there was never like a right position for her. But when it came up, and she had a startup at the time that she was working on, so it took a little bit of convincing. But yeah, I'm really excited to be working with her.
I've always been amazed by the way she did, by the way she promotes the company she works with. It's a human touch that also understands my position, you know, that I wanted to have you on, but how do I have you on? How do I tell her, hey, I'm not sure what to do with this? Well, she totally understood. And she said, look, here's the angle that we could take. And here's some research that will help make this into a great interview, which I now have on my screen here. For anyone who hasn't seen it, her name used to be, before she got married, Stella Feynman. She did one of the first Mixergy courses where she taught, Stella Feynman, where she taught how she gets publicity for the company she works with. You've got to go and watch it. She's fantastic. And if you ever get to see her at a conference, go see her. Yeah. Congratulations on hiring her. Congratulations on hitting 6 million. And more important than all of that, congratulations on stepping up and doing more public interviews. I'd like to see more of you. And I'm proud that this is the first place.
Okay, great. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you. Thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, everyone.